theaters en universiteiten. De jaren 80, Richard Hell is coördinator van de Monday Night Series of Poetry Readings at St. Mark's Church in New York City. De jaren 80, Richard Hell publiceert 3 gedichtenbundels. I Was a Spiral on the Floor, Notebook from Hell, The Story of Theresa Stern, waarvan vorig jaar op het Rotterdams Filmfestival de film te zien was. De jaren 80, de jaren 90. De Kennedys zijn 30 jaar dood. Het doet er niet toe, maar daar gaat het ook niet om. Richard Hell maakt opnames met Thurston Moore van Sonic Youth. De jaren 90. Richard Hell publiceert bij Soyo Records de poëzie-cd Across the Years. De jaren 90. Hank Williams is 40 jaar dood. Passé, maar daar gaat het niet om. Wat telt is zijn poëzie. Vanavond live, Richard Hell.
Hi, ladies and gents. Man, it's good to be here. I feel it's really terrific today. And after that rousing introduction, I'm ready to run around the block 4 or 5 times. What I really got to do today, though, was see the book that Ben just published here in Amsterdam has this. This design here, and the moment I saw that, I thought that I need to imprint that on my body. So I went to the hanky panky and got my. So thank you very much and good night. I'm just gonna read a few poems. This is like the quick survey. As a matter of fact, I probably will not read as many poems, say as many words as my cowboy did up here. I'm going to read first a couple poems from this book called Wanna Go Out, which is published in about 1973, and described itself as the work of this woman, Theresa Stern, right, who describes herself on the back of the book this way: like myself, my poetry is so alive it stinks. And the reason I'm justified in reading this is because it actually is a collaboration that my friend Tom Verlaine and I wrote together. And the picture of Theresa here is really our faces superimposed on each other, wearing a wig and makeup. And this is how she introduces herself. Stars, why did you describe me? You could have had a tree for a tattoo. Why did I have to be these colors? It's an ulterior motive, this 3D nothing. I loved him so much, but I accidentally dropped an electric toothbrush into my cunt and fried his Johnson. My box of chocolates starts singing, this is my father's world, and I ram a tooth into the baritone nougat. She has a carefully cultivated sense of humor that that nobody understands but me. For instance, the stranger and the moon are good buddies. The stranger is a puddle, and the moon is the moon's reflection in the puddle. This is as close as we poets can come to life. I depend upon your mercy as a goose upon a cigar. Close this book, I scream, and come look me up so we can fuck as long as I don't have to talk. I'm not about to pay any of my debts ever. Gored by Beethoven, you should know what it's like to be built inside a little bottle out of wood. The stranger has a cigar and is observing geese pass across the moon like an intricate model ship or symphonic violins. And all I can do is dream of mud. Oh, mud. Mud. You know, me, I'm frankly inclined to just sit here and read this whole fucking book all the way through. But I'm going to cut it with this one more short one. Though human hands are scissors, it's not a question of perception, but of prehistoric love. I'm immortal, too lazy for this planet. How perfect. I sit in the holy fire, and in the bowl, alphabet shit, spelling Teresa. This book is got poems. It's not just recent poems. It goes back to when I first started writing. And I'm going to read a few selections from it. They're kind of in chronological order. Starting when I was like 18 or 19. This one goes, I got no future, no white light in a dark room. There's nobody whose drool is diamonds I'm gonna meet. I don't care. I got a white ballpoint pen with a silver ring around it. I can't remember what I wanted. I read my little book with its iridescent cover while I write it, all bent over, nothing moving but these little keys fitting perfect into their little holes. My hair rises and my eyes widen. Features flatten for safety against my face. Little keys, a swimmer's arms down in the black water. That swimmer prays to me. Little swimmer, I love you. I'll take care of you. You won't drown. It emerges from the waves, creating 10 feet of impenetrable space around it. Dark light in a white room walking towards me. My skin runs away, my eyelids raise. I see the poem is about to begin. Ah, mortal, there's a terrible smell in your refrigerator. It's so sad, your chin, your nose, they're all wrong. You don't really understand anything. You just sit there, tapping at the typewriter, pretending it's all a big joke. It's okay. I completely forgive you. The color Polaroids I took of you naked. You were 19, I was 26. There was something absolute between us. In the photos, two of which are full length, four from the thighs up, you stand casually with a cigarette facing full front, looking in my eyes unself-consciously. A couple show your body in profile. Until today, I hadn't looked at them for a long time. I've made a tremendous discovery. By pretending you never existed, but that I dreamed the image into light on the blank film, by the power of my desire and the pity of the gods, I can perceive them as miraculous souvenirs carried back from a dream that manifest in two dimensions. The woman of flesh drawn from the entire sum of my desires. I have actual photos of the secret, inconceivable female who can fully release all the forms of my desire, miraculously, immaculately conceived on Polaroid film stock. I can look at them and feel it. I don't think I've ever felt happier in my life. One more is this kind of pretty romantic one here. It's called A Castle. Later, I stumbled onto the base of a pinnacle, peaked with pointed towers and swarming with flowered vines. It was dark and felt like rain. I climbed. The moon felt so close I could smell it, and clouds blew across like water paint. My happiness was electric, beyond control. As I climbed, half with my hands, I felt as if I were sculpting the mountain. I took my hands away from the small of her back and then pressed her against me again. So conscious of the pure strength, I felt like a church, and she was weightless. The castle, when I arrived, seemed as fragile as eggshell, but indestructible, and stood blue-gray as a delicate ship sailing into the hour before dawn. It seemed to permit exploration, so I made the pact and stepped carefully inside. After I died, those words became meaningless stone arising from the desert, while now they are meaningless words. The curtain is blowing inward towards me. By writing this, I join the chorus of the poets I love. This is a kind of a membership card. You can have one too. This is called Crime. I love crime. What's a crime? Chances are it's anything that threatens people in power. It's the most obvious open secret that in this society money buys justice. It's so strange and funny how somehow we can be fully aware of this while still imagining it not to be true. People with wealth and power are continuously making self-serving decisions that take money, health, and life from the poor and powerless. The people who make the decisions are never held accountable. Even their victims accept this 99% of the time. It's so ingrained into us that money is virtue and that whatever means can be gotten away with to make and preserve fortunes are justified and even admirable. I remember the first time I used junk. My immediate reaction was, unbelievable, wouldn't you know it? The selfish bastards. Of course they had to keep it to themselves, the greedy fucks. Anything this good they had to keep to themselves. Same goes for deep pornography and all outlaw sex. Now, I don't want to see people hurting each other if it can be helped, but it would take more than all the bank robbers in existence to equal the damage done by, say, a Lyndon Johnson or a George Bush. Some things never change, but let's not kid ourselves about it. I don't have so-called solutions, but yes, crime it up if you can, if you feel like it. Do crime if you got a good idea. Who's it a crime according to? Nobody I give a fuck about. A good crime is a thing of beauty and a joy forever. Is your beauty the price of my mind? This is a kind of an anecdote called It's All True. It's a story of something that happened to me. It's dedicated to Orson Welles, Knute Hampson, and Edgar Allan Poe. The train I arrived on that early autumn night might as well have been a bicycle. I was the only passenger getting off. I felt anxious and awkward as I would have on a bike, and most of all, I've always had a strong imagination. The ostensible purpose of my trip was to meet Edgar Allan Poe for hearthside discussions, but that explanation neglected to take into account my ignorance of my whereabouts as well as Poe's indifference to visitors in 1975 when these events occurred. It was very late at night, though comfortably warm, and I began walking away from the center of the small village towards the hilly forest that surrounded it. I wasn't exactly afraid in the unfamiliar darkness, but my senses felt extraordinarily acute. Actually, I was never so happy to be completely alone and a stranger. I'd taken the ride from New York on an inspired whim and didn't know where I'd gotten to. Tears came to my eyes once or twice simply because there was nothing to prevent them from doing so. I was glad to be still capable of sensitivity. I had left the town behind and was following a grassy path in the open, misty woods. The moon was very bright. Ahead of me, I saw an animal. It was a young doe, but it actually had antlers, and it was white, sexually mutated, and albino as well. I want with all my heart for you to believe that this is really true. A thoughtful and sophisticated human mind, or one that's utterly naive, realizes that anything it can conceive must exist in fact. The universe is certainly as large as a human mind. But I won't humiliate myself any further with pleas for your confidence. The highest art form is the meditative joke. I fell for that dough the minute I laid eyes on it. I've never been able to fall in love in public or with a creature that can talk. This is my innermost self, but it doesn't take much courage to reveal, inasmuch as I realize you're not likely to take it very seriously. I approached the pale doe with eyes half closed and with very weak feeling knees, as if I were gliding, and the only other muscles moving were in the rise and fall of my chest. The deer gazed at me motionlessly. It gazed at me devoid of tension, as if it were invulnerable. Did its brain get the wrong genes too? No, it could never have survived the slightest mental deficiency on top of all the rest. I looked her over and she seemed to be practically aglow with alert intelligence. With the handicap of her glaring visibility, not to mention the sad and confusing effect her possession of antlers must have had on all the other deer, the apparently excellent condition of her health suggested she probably possessed quite superior intelligence. How long shall I dwell on this incident? So many things happened that night. I was never so happy. I gently put my arms around the creamy neck of the calm animal and my head against the soft fur of its side. I stroked it, hardly breathing. I felt completely abstract, as if my being were a force of desire to please the doe. Paradoxically, this feeling increased my own excitement as I found myself automatically further elaborating my act of tenderness toward the exquisite animal with a gentle sexual caress, certainly known only among deer until discovered by me in those moments spent engulfed in the dreamy billows of utter sensuality that seemed to clothe the white doe, blurring the boundaries between us and combining and replacing our surfaces with mist. We came at the same time. The doe's vagina would taste like warm folds of liquefying bubblegum, and then like lobster meat drenched in lemon butter sauce. The alternating flavors shifted like shafts of light reflected from the facets of a big soft diamond colored pink. I was never so grateful. I was a flood of gratitude, pleasure, and happiness. As I lay in the grass with the stars overhead, the doe wandered away. Soon after, I arose and continued my walk.
Thank you.
Let's see. Another couple. We'll get to the. We'll do a couple of the really obnoxious, good obnoxious erotic ones here. that's Amsterdam, right? This is called "Time for Your Spanking." I knew she wanted me to fuck her in the ass. She called me up because she knew I wanted to do it. I liked looking at her asshole. She had a large butt, though she was tall and thin and blonde. I turned her over on her belly and pulled apart the two smooth slabs to look and then put my tongue in. It was pink at the top, and she was so loose and built in such a way that you could see into the shadowed depths at least 3 inches. It was clean, hairless, and slick with my saliva. An absolutely perfect receptacle for a cock. It would feel as if you were being sucked on and you'd get to fuck something that wanted to be butt-fucked, that stuck its butt up in the air and its tongue out along the pillow. It tasted sweet. It tasted like sex, like arousal, her most secret accessible place. I'd never met her, but she wanted me to fuck her in the ass. She knew I'd value it properly. She was offering me the best of herself. When I think of her, I think of her face, and it is the base of her asshole. I would pull apart the slabs of her butt and look inside and put my tongue in. Her anus was pink at the top, and she was so welcoming and built in such a way that you could see 3 inches into the shadows. It was like a long, thin cone, hairless and slippery clean. She was the material whose emptiness beautifully made her asshole possible. It was as if it led all the way out her mouth, where her tongue protruded, her beautiful face, its edges. She was inside out. I got it slick with my saliva. It tasted sweet. It was alive. It tasted like sex, like arousal. I put my hard dick against its entrance. I fuck you in the ass. Your asshole is your personality to me. You are the material whose emptiness beautifully makes your asshole possible. Your asshole is where you end. I put the head of my hard cock against it and push it in. Get the message? before I read that, I'm going to read a couple of the lyrics to new songs. We just completed making a CD in New York. The last couple of months, that's what I've been working on mostly. So I think I'm gonna pick out a couple of those. It's the group called the Dim Stars, I want to read this one. That's about someone I used to know, a young girl about 20, who was a mental type who I've encountered a few times, in that she just didn't want to live. She didn't believe that she had any value. She felt totally worthless. She was completely appealing, sweet, lovable young girl who just somehow could not couldn't conceive of herself as mattering. And she eventually died from an overdose, even though she wasn't a drug user. But it was the way she found of accomplishing her end there. The song is called She Wants to Die. Late at night in New York slums, artists mixing with the bums, in an apartment 5 floors high, resides a girl who wants to die. I want to leap upon her throat and chew my way through every coat of fear and pain, but she's so shy she just says yes and wants to die. I recall the night we met, so pretty, young, and sweet, and yet she could not stand herself. She'd try but could not stand. She wants to die. The storm, your face, the room, unfold. It seems like slow-mo rainfall in the household. Your skin is wet, your mind's undone. Only God knows who you are, where you come from. Kisses for yourself and for anybody else. Thank you for the time that none can tell. It seems that some of us are born to somehow grow up so forlorn, no earthly human place or time can comfort us. We want to die. The sky's alive, their soul in rocks, that human consciousness it mocks. She must return to stones and sky. She's not at home. She wants to die. This one, it was kind of a reaction when the Desert Storm War was going on. It doesn't really talk about it directly, but you see what I mean. It's called Baby Huey. Here comes, is there Baby Huey in Amsterdam? Baby Huey is a cartoon character in the U.S. is for children. He's a gigantic white chicken who's eternally about 4 years old and always wears a diaper. So a really, really tall chicken dressed in a diaper. They called those helicopters they used in Vietnam Hueys too. Here comes Baby Huey down the dusty, silent road while fighter planes roar by above. Everything looks old. Inside his mind, a buzzing noise he'd like to understand distracts him for a moment from the scary-looking land. Baby, do you want to dance? Where'd I wake up now, he wonders, in his diapers in the dark, a question he can't seem to shake. And do I sing or do I bark? Two dimensions gain a third, they're dancing in the street, but Baby Huey starts to cry alone beneath the sheet. He's afraid, baby, do you want to dance? He's afraid he's gonna die alone like that, and stupid too, while all around him rocks and rocks from flowers grew. Here comes Baby Huey down the dusty, silent road, while fighter planes roar by above. Everything looks old. Baby, do you want to dance? I'm going to read one more of these. This is just called the Dim Star Theme. Here comes the night. We're a star, but I'm white and dim. There go the days, far away, like the rest of them. Come to me, honey. Suck my thumb like you used to do. Thumb's what I mean. I could cry, I don't have a clue. Sometimes a man understand, he just don't what to do. I love you so, I don't know, and I don't know too. Make it three, make it four, make it five. I just need you so. Please don't inquire, cause I just don't know. Sometimes a man, he just can't talk. Grant me that, would you? Cause I love you. If you love me, don't walk. Cause I'm tired and I'm sad and I'm mean. But I just want you to come to me, honey, and to hold me and to love me too. Thank you. I'm going to read one last poem. It's the last poem in this book. It's the title poem called Across the Years. And I hope it doesn't give you the wrong idea. It's meant affectionately. goes like this. Flavored paper dumps rocks over the other side, splintering like a waterfall onto an island in the half-light. It resembles handwriting, a hand stretching until it's nearly translucent, transatlantic, reaches across the years to me, as when, alone, I held my own hand, imagining it yours. You helped to make me that kind of great, awful poet whom I exploit here, the way I'd like to fuck you in the ass so much. Thank you.
Daily and the band Rivella.